Hello, everybody, and welcome to All About Symbian's 25th Inside. It's our silver anniversary podcast. The birds that you can't hear are in the background twittering. They're not using twitter.com, they're actually twittering. But joining me to chat properly about all the news and views in the mobile world this week, Rafe Blanford.
Hi, Ewan.
And Steve Litchfield.
Hi there.
And as always, we'd like to welcome you, our listener, as our guest. We know you can't talk in the show, but you're more than welcome to leave your comments back on allaboutsymbian.com. You will find the link back to this show on our media section. Do feel free to continue the discussion there ourselves. We've got a fun week in the last week. Nothing major earth-shattering. Well, it was, but you know, as we were recording this, we haven't had time to look through everything. But Steve, you had a lovely look at some of the clamshell phones that are coming out at the moment and taking a good overview of those, weren't you?
Yeah, a few months ago I looked at things like the Nokia E90, of course. There's an upcoming LG clamshell S60, which I'm dying to have a look at. And there's also a very similar Asus M930, which I've got in my hands at the moment, I've got for review. It's very similar to the 90 at first sight, but the overriding thing I keep coming back to is when the Nokia E90 was launched, I was quite positive about it, for good reason, I think. A lot of people were quite negative about it, and yes, the E90 isn't a perfect product, but it's still pretty darn good. The Windows Mobile's camp have had an extra year to get their clamshell sorted. The 930 is a pretty good example. I'll put some photos up on All About Symbian with comparison photos to the 90, and it's basically just rubbish. The internal screen on a clamshell, a full-height clamshell, you'd expect would be pretty decent. The Nokia E90 manages 800 pixels. This Asus M930 is 400 pixels wide. What is the point in using a dual screen, internal and external, if the internal one's only going to be an extra 20% wider than the external screen? And the keyboard's pretty ropey as well. It's worse than the E90. The software is completely uninspired. Given that you've got a QWERTY keyboard, you really would have expected Office applications or even a notes application, so you could type a note to remind yourself of something. There's no notes, no notepad, no Office apps. It's complete wasted opportunity. I'm going to put some comparison stuff up on the site, so watch for that early next week. But yes, that's the Asus M930 in comparison to the Nokia E90.
Okay, so Steve, in that case, what's the target market for this device then? I mean, one of the things that we always say about the Symbian phones is that they're all heavily targeted for a certain segment of the market. You have Sony Ericsson's Walkman phones and P-series devices have a clear delineation as to things like the N-series and E-series. Where's the Asus aiming for?
The Asus is aiming very much, I guess, for the people who do a lot of text messaging, people who send and receive a lot of SMS messages. But, and I guess it may be even email, because Windows Mobile is quite strong on email. But you have to think the people who send a lot of text messages tend to be the younger people who have grown up with T9, and they're probably faster on T9 than you could be with this rather fiddly QWERTY keyboard. And is it really worth sacrificing the bulk of having something like this Asus and the fiddliness of having a clamshell design with hinge and ribbon cable and all the rest of it, simply to gain a QWERTY keyboard, which a lot of people won't want? My argument with these clamshells, like the E90, is always, if you're going to go down this route, you're going to have the bigger screen, the bigger form factor, the extra weight, the QWERTY keyboard, make the most of it. As on the E90, you've got shortcut keys galore, you've got the full quick office editing suite, there's no excuse to get down to some serious work. With this Asus, it's just a halfway house, and it doesn't please either camp.
I don't know about that, Steve. I think maybe there is space for a halfway camp. I mean, I look at devices, you know, like some of the messengers in the States with the Sidekick, but also something like the LG KT610, which is the S60 device from LG, which is basically a clamshell device. But it's much, much smaller than something like the E90 or the typical kind of clamshell communicator styles. Yet it does have a sort of full QWERTY keyboard inside, but as you were saying earlier, it's actually got the same QVGA screen, just in a different orientation. So it's effectively, it's a bit like an E61 folded in half. And I don't know, I think there may be a place for this for people who are just looking to do a bit of messaging on the go. I mean, I do agree with you, there's a certain flimsiness to it. But I don't think that doesn't mean it can't appeal to a certain market. And of course, the trouble is when you add in some of the extra functionality you were talking about or put in a bigger screen, you put the cost up. And, you know, this LG, I think, will probably come in at a couple of £100s. And if you compare that to the £500 of the E90, I think there's position in the market or a place, maybe not a particularly big one, for that sort of product. Don't you feel that, you know, sometimes people don't need everything and are looking for, you know, maybe something that is a clamshell because it does protect the keyboard and the screen, but don't necessarily want to go the whole hog?
Yeah, I do agree there's a place for this, but I question the fact that they haven't done it properly. I just think if they bothered having an internal screen, why limit it to 400 pixels? There's a good inch either side of this 400-pixel screen where they could have used extra screen space. And there's no excuse whatsoever for not even having a basic notes application, so you can actually type something using the keyboard. I agree there's a place for it. If done properly, the Asus M930 isn't done properly, in my opinion. There are also some horrendous, horrendous bugs, which I'll go into on my smartphone show video podcast. Plug. Watch it soon. Ewan.
Yeah, I love the idea that we had cost come up in there, because it kind of comes onto one of the little spats that I saw last week as well. And this was to do with the cost of SMS specifically, and kind of melds into that whole sort of argument as well. Started off at the start of the week with one of the Breeze researchers coming up going, did you know that at 10p a text, it's more expensive to send a megabyte of data from SMS than it is to receive the same amount of information from the Hubble Space Telescope? Which I thought was a lovely straw man argument. And about a day later, promptly refuted by a couple of PR companies that were, you know, decided to release some studies from research companies that, oh, but there are bundles of SMS, so it's not as much as that. It's not as much as the Hubble Space Telescope coming down. And I just love the fact that yes, there is a huge focus on the cost of those individual SMSs, but very few people are taking into consideration, you know, the fact that it is a market. If people aren't going to pay the cost, and the perceived effectiveness of a text in terms of delivering the message of, you know, instantaneous, the ubiquity of SMS, then they just won't pay it. It's one of the reasons why MMS didn't take off, is people didn't see the value in 40p for a multimedia message. They still see value in 10p a text. And should we always be driving the cost down to its barest levels, or, you know, should these companies, who remember, have a responsibility to shareholders to maximise revenue, keep the cost at a point that the market is happy to pay? And it's just very interesting to very clearly see those two camps of you must drive cost down to, but the market likes this cost, clashing each other quite openly through the medium of press releases.
Yeah, I think this is an interesting one, Ewan. I mean, storm in a teacup if ever there was one. And I'd actually point out the value of SMS is not in the data transfer, it's in the convenience and the guarantee of delivery. You're not paying to sort of transfer a certain amount of data, you're paying to ensure that you can send a message to any other handset anywhere else in the world. And of course, yes, it is very expensive, relatively speaking, but I think this is a bit of a swizz, although I would say that SMS are probably one of the operators' biggest rip-offs, in that it doesn't cost them anything like that much to send an SMS. Of course, it's virtually cost-free for them once they've done the setup, and it just gets rolled into the overheads of the rest of the network. Where it does cost a bit more maybe is in the interconnect fees with international operators. But, you know, the reason obviously that operators can give away unlimited text bundles or big bundles is it really doesn't cost them very much. And at the moment, at least, it's still a significant part of their revenue share. So, I mean, I see the arguments with this, but I sort of slightly raise an eyebrow as well.
I mean, Steve, you had the same sort of arguments when MMS first came along, but it didn't take off, did it?
No, I think you're quite right. This is the perceived value. If speaking as a normal human being, which I am occasionally on Mondays and Thursdays, 10p for a text message, I think the whole world has set their sights on that being about right. Perhaps on the high side, we all begrudge the network operators a tiny bit, but we can all stand 10p a text. It's a small enough amount. 40p, that just starts to get into, that's going to mount up and hurt at the end of the month. And like Rafe said, I don't believe that these things actually cost the network operators that much. Why on earth don't they just say, right, from now on, it's 10p per message, and you can throw in up to 100k of data or picture or video or slideshow animations as part of that message. Just have a flat fee. And I know MMS works in a slightly different way because it has to do a WAP pull and push of bits flying across the network in different ways and different synchronicity. But from a costing point of view, I think MMS would take off if they just said, look, forget SMS, MMS, whatever MS, it's just a message. This is the amount of data you can put in it, but just send it off, we'll handle it, and it's 10p, whatever it is. I think that would work.
Yeah, so it's like the old Woolworths method of everything you see is 20p. Or 10p in this case.
Yeah. Well, I think the only other thing about MMS is it hasn't necessarily reached the right inflection point. And what I mean by that is, as I said, with an SMS, you can pretty much guarantee you can send one to anyone, any phone number, any mobile phone number anywhere on the planet. I don't think the same can necessarily be true of MMS. And the same actually applies to 3G video calls, although there are other problems there, I think. You know, when you send an MMS, you're not always guaranteed that the person is going to be able to read it and receive it. I mean, or at least that's the perception. Now it's better than it was. But more of a problem is the fact that, you know, the MMS clients on different phones vary an awful lot. So while if you're using an S60 phone, you've got a very good MMS client, both in terms of composition and in terms of reading them. If you've got a more standard phone, the MMS sort of reader is not so good. And draw a case of, say you're sending a photo to someone, if you want to guarantee they're going to get a decent version of it, it's better to send it by email, where if you send it by MMS, it may end up being reduced to something like 240 by 180 pixels, so it can be shown on the screen. And many operators actually have a process in the MMS mechanism that sort of resizes things automatically, so even when you do send a high quality one of, say, 80 kilobytes, it gets shrunk down to 12 kilobytes. And so I think that results in a big user experience problem, which for my money is a lot of the reason why people have been put off it. And of course, as with anything else, people only need to have a bad experience a few times and then they'll decide they're never going to use it again. So, I mean, MMS suffers, I think, a lot from that. That, as I say, the inflection point is maybe less an argument with MMS now, because I think, as Steve has said in the back channel, virtually every phone sold does have some kind of MMS client. But you might draw a second inflection point where it has a good experience. MMS, I do use it occasionally, but I only tend to use it with people who I know have a decent phone to be able to receive the message or whatever I'm sending it, being video or picture.
Thanks very much, sir, guys. So we've done cost of SMS, we've done the handsets. I think we need some actual software now. Now, I know we talked a lot about LBS last week, but maps on OVI. Rafe, Steve, what do we think on that?
It's Obby, by the way. I think I'm on a losing battle here. I'm on a losing battle. I listen to podcast after podcast, and they're all calling it Ovi. I think Nokia are just going to have to change the way the Finnish people speak this word. Anyway, I'm now going to open the Ovi for you. Whatever. It's for Means Door, by the way. So maps on Ovi. Yes, Nokia this week announced that they've got a full web-based client whereby you can go onto the internet, you can plan a journey, you can plan, look through points of interest, or to do route planning through its own map service, and then you can simply download that route with all the associated POIs and anything else you've set up, like vias, down onto a new version of the Maps client for their smartphones, and then you can use it on the go. So you do all the heavy lifting and the hard work and on the nice big screen on the internet through the Ovi portal on maps.ovi, and then that then becomes your starting point for your maps experience on your smartphone. And then, of course, as you go along on your smartphone, you can do rerouting and add extra bits. But your starting point with any big journey can be their website. Rafe?
Yeah, I know. I think this is a really important feature. I suspect the first couple of versions may not be quite as smooth as we hope, but I would ask this question of everybody listening and you too. When you're actually going somewhere, how many times do you go and print out something like a Google map or do it in your use an atlas just because the experience of getting that information onto the phone isn't too great? You know, if I know I can go to a website, put in a endpoint for the journey, because we should mention it sort of also syncs sort of points of information or your favorite locations back and forth. So it's basically a full sync solution for Nokia Maps. then, you know, I know I print off a lot of Google Maps when I'm going somewhere just because it tends to be easier. If I can do this via the web and have it synced down to my phone and ready to go with a GPS, I'm sure that's going to be a much better experience. I do wonder to an extent how well this can be done with Nokia, because they're obviously going to be competing to an extent with Google Maps on this, although I think they're going to have a much better integration between the PC and the mobile side. So I hope that Nokia, you know, similar to Google Maps, actually comes out with some API so that third-party developers can build stuff on top of it, because that's a lot of the value. And certainly they've said with Ovi that's exactly what they're going to do, but it'll be interesting to see what comes out. But having said that, even just using Maps on Ovi as kind of a route planning from your PC, there's an awful lot of value in that, and we know there are various sites, you know, the likes of AA Roadwatch and a number of others for doing exactly that kind of planning. If you're then offered the ability to send that stuff off to your phone without really having to think about it too much, you know, I think the potential there is absolutely amazing. And of course, as I say, what really excites me is kind of the stuff that could potentially be built on top of that if there's a decent API. I mean, it'll be interesting to see how Nokia can keep up with something like Google Maps, because I noticed this week Google Maps has been integrating more information from Wikipedia and geo-referencing photos and have them display on its map, and offers a very powerful tool, and certainly the big incumbent and has the first mover advantage. So whether Maps on Ovi will be able to you know, keep up in that sense, I'm not sure, but certainly in terms of the route planning, the points of information and the sync, which after all is the most common use for the sort of middle of the road user, I think they're going to do very well there, and I look forward to seeing it coming out. It may take a while to get polished, as with all these things, but I think it's a very important part of Ovi.
And I think it's fair to say that one of the things that I've been enjoying about Ovi, that's Ozzy Ardila. It's going to Wembley, isn't it? Yes, one for the Hawkwind fans there. Is the fact that these announcements that we're seeing from Nokia, or Nokia for our American listeners, they can't even decide there for the pronunciation either. It's all these little elements are all starting to actually coalesce together in this central portal. It's this thing that the networks have been kind of warily eyeing from a distance. We've seen that over the past that these elements are coming in, and the other element that came out this week was the Nokia PC music suite, which again, you know, music is playing a very heavy part in the OV strategy from Nokia, and this PC. Well, how would you describe it, Steve? I mean, it's not just a client for music on your handset, is it?
I'm going to pass on this one because I haven't even looked at it. Rafe, you take this one.
Yeah, no, I downloaded this and take a look. And I think the easiest way to explain it is it's basically Nokia's version of iTunes, in that it allows you to organise all this music on your PC, but it will also have a link into the Nokia Music Store. That's not actually operational in the beta, but, you know, it's pretty easy to imagine how that will work. And actually, the thing that's interesting about this, as far as I'm concerned, is Nokia have actually chosen to be a little bit more open than I think is typical of something like Apple iTunes, in that it's very much, you know, into getting your side-loaded music, your already existing music on your PC, into the client very easily. That's, you know, done from startup with various watch folders. And certainly it was a better experience for me than I've had with iTunes doing exactly the same thing. Crucially, it's also using... for the actual transfer process, it's using MTP, which stands for Media Transfer Protocol. It's basically a Microsoft standard, which has become, you know, pretty much an open standard. It's not proprietary, really. And so that means that any MTP-capable device can use it. So that's not just Nokia phones. That's a whole range of Sony Ericsson phones, a whole load of sort of portable MP3 players. And, you know, so if people do want to use this for things other than their Nokia devices, they're going to be able to. And while I'm not sure how much that will happen, I do think that says volumes about Nokia's approach to this. And it is an early beta, as I say, so there are some things that are a bit on the flaky side, and it uses sort of the .NET Framework version 3, which does require a fairly powerful PC, so there were some performance issues. But there were some nice touches, like, you know, a tutorial when you first open the application, the ability to drag and drop a CD straight from your CD drive onto your phone, so things get get ripped off a CD and dropped straight onto your phone, so it's very easy to use. And there's, you know, good stuff like the playlist management is pretty strong in this application with bi-directional sync. So if you create a playlist on your phone, it will come back into the PC client and vice versa. And so all these, you know, there's lots of little things like that that really, really make a difference. And of course, you know, that more stuff is going to come in the future, you know, stuff to help you fix album art, for example, or music recommendations based on what you've got in your library that you'll then be able to buy from the store. And of course, this will tie in later with, you know, comes with music. And as far as I'm concerned, at least as far as Nokia products are concerned, this is a quantum leap forward in being able to manage your music on your PC. So, you know, obviously, you know, early days yet, but I was very impressed by this, and big improvement over Music Manager or just using Windows Media Player in the vanilla version, which had been your options before.
I think I'm going to fine Ray for using the phrase, it's a quantum leap. That's not allowed.
Sorry, so we'll sorry, Ewan.
So there we go, and then we'll give you all the money back again because we've got all the pronunciation wrongs. Steve, you've never used it. Does that make it sound appealing now?
It makes it sound more appealing than Nokia Music Manager, which is a complete dog's dinner of an application. I still quite enjoy using Windows Media Player. I know it's a very humble solution, but it does do a fairly good job of getting all my WMA music files off my hard disk. The question I've got here for Rafe, who's tried it, is that the Nokia Music Manager was incredibly finicky at how it actually looked up CD information off the internet. It sometimes used Grace Notes, a big data commercial database, for some N-series devices, and sometimes didn't for non-N-series devices, and it was all rather fiddly. What's the CD information situation with this new software?
I'm not actually sure, Steve, because I haven't looked at the actual mechanics behind it, but the couple of CDs I put in worked absolutely fine, got all the information off the internet, including in all but one case the album artwork as well, I think. It worked without too much of a problem for me, so I suspect it's a case of they're just going to license it for all their users now.
Okay. I think what I was expecting you to ask, Steve, was does it use Ogg Vorbis or AAC and all the other fancy formats as well? Rafe, have we got a formatting list on what music it does play and stuff?
Again, I haven't actually looked at that stuff because all of my music is in MP3 or some of the stuff I've downloaded from the Nokia Music Store is, of course, in Windows Media Audio format. However, I would imagine that AAC is certainly supported, as I think that will probably be a standard Nokia will move towards more, or indeed EAAC. Sorry, I can't answer your question on that, but one I can say about something else that's quite a nice touch. You can obviously also use this as a kind of a media player on your PC, and the way it works is you can sort of add tracks to a queue, which that can play one by one. So this allows you to sort of build up a list of tracks that you want to play on your PC. But the nice touch is you can sort of play those through and say, I rather like that collection, and you can then save that queue as a playlist, which obviously you can then transfer to your device. And in terms of syncing to the mobile device, this can be done in any number of ways, including based on a certain number of playlists or how you rated the songs or recent ones, and that can be done automatically. And one of the things that Nokia say they wanted to do when they were designing this application is make it easier for you to connect to and transfer your music on a more regular basis, and certainly I think they've succeeded in that goal. The one fly in the ointment might be the speed of the USB transfer, but that's not really to do with the music PC client. That's more to do with the devices themselves, and certainly in the newer devices that are coming out this year, the N78 and the N96, that problem has been fixed. So you're still going to be plagued by slow USB speed transfer issues, but the application itself is a lot more user-friendly in terms of getting exactly what you want to transfer across, even when you're, you know, dealing with a mobile device that does have limited space.
And again, it's worth stressing that these applications aren't, you know, for the tech elite, the top 1% of people who are using smartphones and thrashing them to within an inch of their lives and storage capability. They're for the regular people who maybe only want to move an album or two at most a month once they've done that initial load. Yeah, and it's also worth...
Ewan, that's absolutely right. And you have to bear in mind that this is in beta, so it will be more polished by the time it gets to its final version. And the way it's going to be being used is it will be on the CD that's in the, you know, the box with the phone, and people will install it and say, hey, this is a great, you know, music client, enables me to get music onto my phone very easily, just like, you know, PC Suite is really a mass market product. And obviously there's going to be a direct comparison to something like iTunes, and it certainly stands up much better than previous Nokia products in that sense.
And it's also worth pointing out the sheer number of versions of iTunes that there have been. It's up to about 7.6 now, and it's literally moved up in 10 since about version 2 or 3, which was the first one that could run in Windows PC. So I think it's a completely fair approach to get it out and build often, release often, and it's great to see that come on board, and the fact that it's staying nicely open as well.
Yeah, and you know, Nokia releasing this stuff through Beta Labs is great because we get to have an early look at it and play about with it if we want to. But they're also, you know, very much encouraging user feedback, and they want people to say what they want in the next version. And, you know, they're certainly taking that on board, and you can see some of the evidence in that and some of the other products that have come out of Nokia Beta Labs. And I think it has meant that Nokia's maybe been able to integrate user feedback more quickly, and I think for something like this product that's particularly important. So I suspect by the time we actually see the final version, or maybe version 2 and 3, we'll see Nokia able to iterate and improve the product much more quickly. So it's just, you know, another vote in favour of Beta Labs as far as I'm concerned.
Okay, so we've got a couple of highlights of the software world just to close off, but before we do that, and kind of staying with the Beta Labs as well, Steve, how's your memory?
Bad.
Tell our listeners about Fit for Life, which I believe you wrote back in about 1998, 1999.
Yeah, think We Fit for the Scion. I wrote a little program. I was trying to help people, trying to stay fit. So basically, you'd run this little program at immediately after you've done a jog or a run, and it basically, you're using the keyboard and the screen, it established your heart rate, and then you, after a period of seconds, it measures your heart rate again, and using your age, your weight, your body mass index, etc., and the way your heart rate changes, it then tells you basically how fit you are, whether you're a couch potato or a super athlete. is that what you wanted to know, Ewan?
That's it, because I wanted to bring that up, because it struck me that Nokia's Beta Labs' other release this week, which was the step counter for a number of the N-series phones, it just put me in that mind of that sort of lifestyle and personal application. And actually, having a, you know, your phone is a great communication tool, but these computers in your pocket are able to mean a lot more to you. And step counter put me in mind of Fit for Life. It's, you know, you put in your height, your weight, your body mass index, you switch it on, and it uses the accelerometers, and you just leave it in your pocket all day. And at the end of the day, you lift it up, and you get some pretty graphs. It tells you how many steps you've taken, roughly how far you've traveled, how many calories that you've used up during that day, and, you know, it shows you, you know, where you're just strolling along, we're doing a lot of effort, a huge amount of effort. And I just really like those applications, because they're taking away from the sort of computer geeky that you sometimes get with these devices, and going, look, this is actually something that's a good positive change to your life. This is a application that, you know, it's one of these things that I think actually would sell handsets, because you go to people, look, it tells you how far you walked and how many steps you took, and you should be doing 3,000 a day because the government says so. I just love it.
Yes, but Ewan, but when will they invent a program that actually detects how many of your five fruit and veg you've taken each day? We need some kind of automatic monitoring of that as well.
Yeah, it needs to use the camera and the sort of, you know, the microphone to sort of sense when you're munching on your carrots.
So, Nokia Beta Labs, if you're listening, we'd like Food Planner now.
Carrot Counter.
Carrot count. Well, that's CC. You can't CC. You know. You might get confused with the email application.
Oh, that's true. It's true.
Do you know? I thought you said Nokia Pizza Labs there. I thought, what a great idea, Nokia Pizza Labs.
Take a photo of five ingredients, MMS it to us, and we'll send you over a pizza with a Scion pointer, some biodegradable plastic, and pepperoni. Yeah, good one, Steve.
I think I'll knock up a Nokia Pizza Labs prototype in Python, and I'll send it to you guys.
Ooh, Python pizza. Nice. okay, we're joking about little utilities there, but Steve, your software pick of the week, I understand, is another utility.
It is. It's an absolutely tiny utility as well. It's written by the same guy who wrote Mobitubio, the YouTube client. You can look it up on the web, and I won't attempt to pronounce his Christian name or his surname because they're both unpronounceable.
But he's, so what is it? OVS60 then?
Sitiful somebody or other. Anyway, he's a brilliant guy. He's written a tiny little program to fulfill a huge need. If you're anything like me, you get fed up with the theme on your S60 smartphone every single day and you want something different. So rather than have to dive in, under Feature Pack 1 devices, you have to go into Set Tools, then Settings, then General, then Themes, and it's about six levels down just to get to choose the theme. What he's done is a brilliant little, presumably 10 lines of C++ utility, just called Themes. You stick it in your root folder on your S60 device, and it just one click, and you're spang into the themes, and you pick the next theme. Absolutely brilliant, totally free, and tiny to, on your disk. So highly recommended.
There we go. It's your All About Symbian podcast. You're more than welcome to leave your comments back at allaboutsymbian.com. Any closing thoughts from you guys, or shall we just carry on with the week of posting the news and reviews and articles and stuff?
No, I think we can wrap it up there.
Lovely. Well, thank you very much to our regular contributors, the Oxford English Pronunciation Dictionary notwithstanding, Rafe Blandford.
Cheers, Ewan.
Steve Litchfield.
Yeah, goodbye for me.
And myself, Ewan Spence, desperately resisting the urge to close with a two Ronnie's line. Goodbye.
And...